Hello, Will.
Hey, Ryan.
How's it going?
Yeah, really well, actually. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Always good.
Always good. It's good to hear. I think we're talking about colleges today.
Okay. Interesting. Which bits? There's so much to talk about.
There is a lot to talk about, and we'll talk about colleges in other episodes as well. But I think we want to talk a bit about, what's good about a collegiate system, what's less good about a collegiate system, if there are any cons at all. And obviously, that's a bit about what we liked in particular.
So why don't we start off by defining what a collegiate system is? I suppose some listeners may not be familiar with that
Yeah,
term.
that'll definitely help. So if effectively, and a lot of people don't know this, but when you apply to Oxford or Cambridge, you're not just applying to the university, you're also applying to a specific college. And each of these unis are split up into dozens of colleges. Oxford and Cambridge aren't the only place that does this. So Durham has colleges as well. But it's not an incredibly, it's a bit of a rare way of doing university. In America, there's a lot of campus universities. In the UK, we have like a mix of campus and sort of city universities, which a handful of college ones. But yeah, so whilst you're at the university, you belong to the uni, but you also belong to your college, and your college, you live there, you eat there, and excuse me, a lot of your friends will be there as well.
Yeah, I tend to liken it to, if you for those of you who know Harry Potter, and if you don't, why are you listening to this instead of Harry Potter? But yeah, so for those of you familiar with Harry Potter, it's a bit like having houses. So you, I mean, there's no evil house or there's no evil college.
Well,
Yeah, I could think of one. But essentially, that college is where you meet most of your friends, at least initially. It's where you do sports, so like the Quidditch equivalent of whatever you
You
fancy.
can do
You can,
Quidditch.
yeah, I've heard. I'd be interested to try it.
Yeah, I was keen to give it a go, but there was so much to do in those first couple of weeks that it got left by the wayside.
So yeah, there was so yeah, essentially it's where you sleep. So the college provides your accommodation for you. Your overall teaching is at a university level, but your small group teachings take place at the collegiate level. The foods that you have are at the collegiate level where you stay. So essentially you kind of end up, people tend to think of Cambridge and Oxford as like a bubble, but I tend to describe it as some 30 odd smaller bubbles, kind of, which often have like connecting tubes with each other.
And yes, so obviously it's very different to the way that lots of other universities do. I suppose lots of city universities will have like halls, and you'll live in one set of student halls, and there'll be a few different ones. But there's not really a culture as much behind those halls, or a sense of identity, whereas the colleges definitely have that. It's a lot more familial.
Yeah, and it's weird how colleges develop a culture. I think, that when you go to them, most people as undergrads will be entering when they're 17, 18. You kind of develop this, the culture becomes part of you. So I think, lots of people worry about, is that college going to be right for me? In most cases, you end up becoming right for the college because you're at a relatively impressionable age and moldable age as well. So there are certain colleges, for example, King's was known to be incredibly secular and kind of progressive, whereas my college was very, Gombauld and Caius was very traditional. They insisted, and we talked about this, they insisted on you
On the whole,
coming to halls. So, and I'm sure if I'd gone to King's, I would have been perfectly happy and I would have just turned into someone slightly more liberal than I ended up at Caius. But it's just the ethos of the college is quite a strange thing.
Yeah, and I suppose, you're actually only, well, most people, excuse me, my throat's all over the place. Most people are only there for 3 years. So you're sort of in your first year, maybe adopting the culture. Second year, you're in the culture, and last year, you're
Passing down the culture.
passing down the culture and, revising. But it's interesting that it's very resilient to change, even though the members change so frequently.
That is true, and I certainly didn't have a good understanding of the college I applied to
Okay.
in terms of the characteristics. I knew a few things about it, but I certainly didn't know like all the intricacies that I obviously knew at the end of my first term. So, but yeah, clearly I would say majority of my friends and I kind of embodied the culture of that college by the time we finished our tenure there. Now, obviously, some of us had 6 years instead of three, but even at the end of 3 years, most of us kind of fitted in, and you could kind of one experiment that you used to ask. There was an article in the Tab recently, which said describe each college in 3 words. And actually, I went through it and I said, yeah, actually, I'd agree with a lot of these. And I think when you can get to that level of granularity by each college, that clearly shows that that's something that's preserved across several cohorts. And I certainly didn't feel like there was significant culture coming from the top, so it was clearly something that was being bred and propagated internally.
I think generally, and so actually, one thing to say as well is colleges sort of have different bodies. So there's the JCR, which is the Junior Common Room, which is basically all the undergraduates. Above that, it gets a bit complicated because some people have different names for it. You have SCRs, which is Senior Common Room, GCRs. Is GCR one? Yeah, Graduate Common Room,
So we had an MCR, which was the
or MCR, Masters Common Room.
Yeah, I've never actually figured that out.
So normally I think, but I mean, it could be anything, but I've heard MCR in terms of masters. But so we had a SCR and a GCR and a
Right.
JCR.
Well, that makes sense. And obviously, all three of those bodies will have slightly different agendas. They'll be doing slightly and also have slightly different activities. And a lot of it does depend on the committee itself. So if you have a lazy committee, you may not see much activity. Whereas if you have someone that's very active, then they might get flooded with emails in your inbox.
And you can, so again, we talk about committees, but so when you're at your college, each year you'll have, or sometimes even termly, the JCR positions are elected or hustled for. And so you can have, classical positions like JCR president, JCR treasurer, but also other ones like we had a tortoise rep.
A tortoise,
A
right?
tortoise rep,
What do they do?
they look after the tortoise.
There's a tortoise.
So every year there are tortoise races at Corpus Christi. I don't know if you've ever.
No.
So it's quite funny actually.
How have
So
I not known about this?
there's about, I think about eight colleges house a tortoise. So Christchurch's was called Sampras.
Okay.
And so in the summer,
How big are these tortoises?
so it varies. Generally on the smaller side, they're not giant Galapagos. But so, generally on the smaller side, certainly you could sort of hold them, a good sized rock, I guess. But yeah, and so in the summer,
The size of a laptop, basically.
yeah, that's not
Yeah,
bad. Yeah, it's pretty good. So yeah, in Trinity term, Corpus Christi holds it. They've got a nice garden at the back, where very tragically I lost a very important Cuppers game in the Croquet Cuppers. But they have it, and so there's a big ring, and the tortoises are held by each tortoise rep in the middle, and so they're all sort of put down at the same time, and it's the first one to get
out of the ring.
out of the ring,
And is
basically.
there any incentive to drive them out? As in,
Do they have food at the
at the edge
at the
of
edge? I can't remember now.
like a circle of carrots around.
I guess they must have.
Otherwise you just
Otherwise, they
stay
just stick
there.
around. Yeah, I think they must have had some kind of food. The incentive for the tortoise rep is, eternal college pride for having won.
Glory.
Glory, all those kind of things. So,
Pretty prestigious.
there's
Palm
lots
Plaza.
of, there was also a cake rep.
Yours are
So,
much more exciting than the ones I had. The most edgy thing I think we had was an access officer or LGBT rep.
But yeah, I mean, so there's a lot of different things that you can get involved with. You can take it very seriously, be JCR president, or you can, get involved as cake rep or whatever it is you want to do. But actually, a lot of what the more, I suppose, more official JCR positions will be doing is sort of liaising with and almost lobbying the SCR or the MCR
For funding.
for funding to allow things to happen and all that kind of stuff. So there's a dynamic within the college between these different bodies. And I think that's, part of what college life is. We get an email from the junior dean saying, following discussions with JCR president, we've agreed to allow X, Y, or Z, whatever it is.
Yeah, that's true. And I suppose if you imagine being president of the university as a, you know, as a student rep president, that's a huge amount of work to undertake. But actually being president of your college, that's less work, but it's still one way to experience, go through that experience without kind of essentially sacrificing your degree or friends.
Yeah, exactly. So if you wanted to be president of the union, you'd have to take a year out. You'd be forced to. Whereas if you were to be JCR Prez, you could just carry on.
And I experienced a similar thing. So I was a MedSoc vice president for my tenure. And there's no way I would have been able to do as much work as I wanted to and kind of do the duties that my role needed if I was a university vice president, for example. And also, you know, it's just... It is a lot more competitive, is something we've not really talked about. So it is much harder to get because you're competing with 30 other colleges.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's just you on your own, in your own little college, that's much easier. So I think at one point we even had positions that only one person applied for, so it was fairly straightforward.
Yeah, they'd often, you'd get an email the night of hustings saying, no one's applied for this rep, can anyone do it? And then you can just sort of swan into it. So we were going to talk about, we've talked about what colleges are a little bit and what makes them up. In terms of pros and cons, I feel like pros is probably going to be a little bit easier to do. What did you see as the benefits of being in a college system?
So I think we've kind of touched on them. Is you can get it. So let's say you're wanting to take up badminton like I did and you've never played before. There is no way you could do that at a normal university and play competitive badminton.
Yeah,
because you have to play at university level. Obviously, that's a very high level in most sports.
Pretty intimidating.
And intimidating. Imagine just going to train. I mean, I trained with the Cambridge Blues, which was the Cambridge table tennis team, and they were at the next level. I've been playing for about 10 years, and I find that very difficult. But when I was at college, I was table tennis captain for a year, VP for another year, and that was just much more friendly. We won cuppers twice.
Nice.
So you know, we knew what we were doing, but. It was that confidence that allowed me to kind of go into it. Whereas I think if I'd walked into that university hall, it would have been just, God, everyone's better than me. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
So I think there's one, it's less competitive, it's more welcoming, it's friendlier.
Yeah.
It's easier to get into a team or a society. And because of that, it's easier to kind of have a social life because you'll see your friends both in kind of who are doing your lectures with you, but also you'll see them in these societies.
Yeah. Yeah, I think certainly in terms of it fosters an environment where participation is made as easy as possible, and is, you know, very much encouraged, both from a sporting perspective, also from like a political perspective. Like it's easier to be JCR Prez and doesn't take up as much time, you know, and you can do way more. If you want to go to a normal university and you want to be on the swimming and you want to do swimming, you're going to be doing swimming training, you know, 4 or 5 times a week, and that can take up basically all your time outside of your degree. But you could very easily, in a collegiate system, do weekly badminton, table tennis, volleyball, swimming as well, just because the commitments are lower. It's a bit more casual, but that doesn't mean the you can't enjoy the
experience. I think we're painting it off as if you're terrible, you'll kind of come and get your ass handed to you in a... in competitive games, but actually you're competing against other colleges with people who are in a similar position to you.
Yeah.
So that obviously means that you can have competitive games with it meaning something without it just being kind of every game is a friendly and chill out.
Yeah, and there would be, so when we played a lot of hockey, because one of my friends was the hockey captain for the college, and we often didn't have enough players, so I'd sort of be there to help out, even though I wasn't very good. But at the start of the game, the sort of the brief would be, right, they've got 4 blues on their team, we're in trouble. Or, don't worry, there's no blues over there, we're happy.
And often we'd mark out who the blue is.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We're like, okay, well, we'll put our weakest players against because I think we know we're going to lose anyway.
Yeah.
But I think that the key thing here is, you know, we're focusing a lot on sports, but there are other opportunities across the other fields as well. So there were loads and loads of talks that my college used to organise. So our medical society organised all sorts of weird and wonderful talks. Sometimes other colleges could come to them, but that was a chance it's for it to be relatively interactive, there are only about 50 people in them. So you can still have kind of Q&A coming, whereas if there's hundreds of you, that's not really practically possible.
Yeah.
There were piano recitals and music societies. There was a choir.
Plays as well. Big college. I mean, and it will vary from college to college, but if your college has like a theatre group, you're pretty much going to always get in a play if you want to and if you want to engage with it.
Yeah.
I think that's a
So I think it was
thing.
Just, it was a test of, colleges was essentially a test of effort and activity more than any competence or anything. And I think once you got to it, then you could still be better at it. So for example, my college had four or five rowing boats and you started at the bottom and you could work your way up. And the first boat was very competitive. They used to wake up at 4 a.m. and I don't know how they did it and do that 6 days a week or something. So there were options available. But I suppose it just lowers the barrier for participation.
Yeah, if you throw yourself into something outside of a college university, there's a chance that it might not go the way you want. Whereas if you throw yourself into something where there's the colleges, you will be able to do what you want, really. And I think that's important, especially when, you know, you might not have done much sport, you might not have done much drama, you might not have done much politics, but it might be something that you want to develop as a skill or learn. And so having an environment where that's good is really important. I mean, the other pro is, in terms of like meeting people and developing a, you know, group of friends and a social network, the college system really helps. You know, in a way, you have to spend time with these people. And I don't know if it was the same for you, but sort of in the first couple of weeks, there was lots of arranged stuff by the freshers reps who were JCR committee members. So there's lots of sort of engineered friendship there, but actually it means that you do meet a lot of people and you do come out of it, you know, relatively successfully. You know, I hear about people at, you know, these enormous city universities where it's very easy, like, let's say you don't like the people in your flat and you sort of struggle to spark up conversation in the lecture hall. It's very easy to sort of miss out a bit there, which it's more difficult in a college system, and I think that's really helpful.
Yeah, on that note, I Keys took things a little bit further. I don't know if they still do this, but when we ended up on our first day at the college, we got given a pack and they told us, here's your flu friends details. And essentially
flu friends,
so essentially, you know, freshers flu is a big thing, like,
okay,
it kind
yeah
of goes around. And they were genuinely worried that there might be someone out there who may not know anyone in the first few weeks and gets ill and then kind of misses out. So the idea was that, one, if you get ill, that you're obviously trying to make friends, but if you're not able to, then you can call this person.
Okay.
And then they kind of contractually obliged, I'm using air quotes here, to kind of look after you and kind of bring
That's
you
nice
them
stuff.
But yeah, it was really nice. And actually, I ended up being really good friends with them for the next 3 years.
Did you have college families?
We did, yeah. So, do you want to talk a little bit about, because that's quite a strange concept as well.
And actually, this does vary from college to college. There's different culture for it. But basically, when you start, you'll have a college mum and a college dad. Or if it's a very modern arrangement, you might have two college dads or two college mums. So I had two college dads, and I also had a college sister. And basically, the college family system is what you make of it. So, you know, I sort of engaged a lot with my college kids when that time came around. And so we sort of did a lot together and they sort of, we were communicated a fair bit. But equally, if you're not that bothered, you can just not commit to it too much. But I suppose the idea is you meet your college parents before you get there. So it's an opportunity to ask questions, know someone before you arrive. And also in your first couple of weeks, they'll probably sort of take you around the city, you know, go for dinner with you, that kind of thing. So it's really, again, it's there. You've got a network set up for you. What did vary from college to college was when you would get married. So at my college, the culture was basically you get married in the first week or you're in trouble.
Wow. That is aggressive.
That is aggressive. So I proposed on the Saturday, first Saturday that we'd been there.
Wow.
At our college party. But that was basically, you know, lots of people were married by then already. Wow. So that
not an
wasn't,
early bird then.
no, I would
Wow.
say sort of maybe middle of the
That is a
pack.
lot of pressure to put on someone.
It is. I mean, and so what you find is lots of people end up, when it comes around to next year, you don't really know the person that you college married because
Yeah, I bet.
you've not spent
It's
any
a
time.
terrible idea for like life in general.
So luckily I really got on well with my college wife, and we're still good friends, and so that wasn't an issue. But certainly a number of my friendship group were a bit tentative about
Yeah.
the next year when they had to get through it. Various people got college divorced.
Oh, wow.
Obviously if you've severely fallen out with someone since then, you don't really want to then have to sort of go on a tour with these two new people with them there. So there were college divorces as well, but lots of different colleges would be later. And if you don't have anyone that you want to college marry, you sort of just get paired up at the end. So there's not too much pressure. I mean, it was at the time, it didn't feel like, it was just quite fun. Everyone was getting married, oh, these people have got married yesterday. How
Yeah,
exciting, that kind of thing.
it is exciting. I think I was one of the earlier ones that did it, but I think even me, I was a few weeks into the. So yeah, I clearly should have taken my leave. But actually, there was a bigger gender ratio disparity in my year.
Okay.
So I think there were about 15 girls and 7 boys. So
Okay.
I was had to move quickly, but
Yeah.
clearly not as quickly as you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that the college system is really interesting. The college family system is, I think, something that's just not really talked about much. So, but when I, before I even ended up at Cambridge, so this is after I got my grades and kind of before I got my actual kind of details to go there. So it's kind of in the August to October
Yeah.
period. My college parents actually contacted me on Facebook and said, "Do you have any questions? Here's my
Yeah.
details, my number. Call me if you." And basic stuff. So, for example, I really wanted to take a piano to Cambridge, and I said, "Look, am I going to be able to do that?" And it was just really comforting to know that there were two people who'd been there, gone through the same course,
Yeah.
could tell me exactly what to look out for. My dad was really awesome. He kind of took out books from the college library for me in advance and said, "Here are your textbooks. So don't bother buying them."
Nice.
So, and they took us out to a nice college family meal on our first week.
Yeah.
It was really just. I think it is what people make of it, and then we kind of
Mm,
passed that on
definitely.
to our college kids, and I think we even had a college grandkids. We had 3 generations of us at one point.
So you could, yeah, because if you do put effort into it, you can have a really nice lineage
Yeah.
of, and that's my college nephew or
Yeah.
whatever it is, those
I think
kind
I
of things.
adopted a grandson as well because he
And
was abandoned by his family.
I guess for medics
Yeah.
in particular, you
Yeah.
could have
Very long.
several
So there's
generations.
an interesting chap called Gulhuli was his name.
Okay.
When I was there, essentially it was. There's all sorts of rumors and legendary stories about this guy,
Okay.
as you can imagine, from a relatively elitist Cambridge college.
Okay.
But he was about 3 or 4 years above me, I think. So I've never met him. I don't know how true some of these stories are.
Interesting.
But for example, there's a story that he used to tell his supervisors to go get his lecture notes for him from the lecture theatres when he slept in.
Okay.
And that apparently the supervisors would do that, which to me is unthinkable
Yeah.
for me to tell my professor to do that. But anyway, barring all of that aside, every year there used to be a Gulhuli convention
Wow.
where only the people who are directly blood in air
Yep.
quotes descendants of Gulhuli could attend, and it was sponsored by Gulhuli. I don't actually know if this is true.
That's quite cool.
And obviously at the start it was only like 5 people. But by the time I was in my final year, it was about 50 people just because of the way it worked. So I think at that point it was disbanded because they probably couldn't afford to keep doing it. But it was an interesting. But those are the kind of traditions that are very easy to sort out in a Cambridge college or an Oxford college system, which I think would be quite difficult to not just start but maintain in a big university, which perhaps
Definitely.
is a bit more faithless.
One thing that's also worth saying is your college parents are subject matched. They'll pick you a kid. If you have two parents, often the parents are of the same subject, but they don't have to be. But if you're an English student and your husband is a history student, then you'll get two, an English and a history kid, basically.
Yeah, I think that's hugely helpful because when you get to Oxford, a lot of the time you're just trying to figure things out. Which lectures do I absolutely need to go to? Which ones do I need to go to
All of
twice?
them are a
Which one do I need to go for? So I went through this phase of recording some of the lectures because I just could not remember the information that was being processed. So I went through the phase of actually listening to them twice and remembering. But sometimes my parents would kind of direct me to the correct lecture notes. They would say, actually, don't bother learning this topic. It never comes up in exams. And all that's really useful stuff to know.
And midway through the year, I'd get, hey, did you do this module? I'm really struggling with this essay. Could I, have a look at yours? That kind of thing. It's helpful to have that network. I mean, I think what we're saying is the main pros of the college system is one, you can engage basically across the board on any kind of activity that you want to on a much easier level and on a much sort of more friendly level. And of course, if you want to do it really competitively, you can. But also, the college sets up like a network for you, which makes firstly going to university a lot easier because you've got people there already sort of responsible for you. But also, whilst you're there, it's much, you're able to foster this network. One thing that I should say is, you do make lots of friends outside of your college. But, it's fair to say, I think, and different people will do this differently. But I'd say about, a half to two thirds of my friends were probably college based, and then another half or a third were outside, course based or sports based, that kind of thing.
I think it depends on the college and the
Yeah,
type of
absolutely.
person you are ultimately. But, I think those ratios are pretty reasonable. So I think mine's closer to 80-20. But the other thing to kind of add on to that is it's much easier to bring about change in a college than it is. I mean, change is almost an antonym for Oxbridge, but it is possible. But I think it's much easier to bring about at the collegiate level than it is at
Definitely.
university. And this kind of ties into the society's piece as well, because when I was MedSoc Vice President, we used to, in this tied into Keys Library. So Keys Library is beautiful. It just looks wonderful. And it's run by some very, very talented librarians. And unfortunately, one of the consequences of this is that they are very protective of their texts and materials. So we literally had a section in the library. It used to be, I think it was room 8 or 9, but it was colloquially called the locked case, very ominously. And it was literally locked. You had to go in there, you had to go in with the librarian. If you were browsing in that case of books, you would have a librarian essentially breathing over your shoulder. When, friendly breathing, I suppose. When you took it out, you signed the book out, you had 24 hours to return it. And if you didn't, you got a fine.
What books were in here?
Yeah,
Sort of
it
like
sounds like
dark magic spells or
that.
something.
They were just the newest editions of key medical texts that are valuable. So, for example, the
I would
updated
have thought
is.
actually conversely it would be the oldest editions which would be like kept that carefully if
No,
it's
I think they were just. There was relative scarcity for these textbooks.
okay, so you didn't want anyone
So they
holding
didn't
them.
want people holding onto them for longer. But the problem was, of course, and we talked about this previously, is if you're working in a library, that's very easy. You just go to the lock case again the next day and just take the book out for the day and then return it. That's pretty straightforward to do. But if you're working from home and your home is 15-minute cycle away,
It's
that's a lot
tricky.
of time you're spending just ferrying these heavy textbooks, especially if you're having to ferry two or three. I think three was a limit. If you sweet talk them, you might be able to get four for it. But this was very difficult and very. I found this infuriating. So I worked with the head librarian, and we introduced a system to essentially electrify the whole system,
Electrify, yeah.
electrify or to automate is probably a better word. But essentially, instead of us getting a nasty email, we could just renew the book online, which I know sounds like a really minor thing, but there's no way I'd been
Makes
able to
me,
do that at the university library, for example. So it's just small changes in combination of collegiate policy versus collegiate societies working in tandem. You can actually improve in things for, and that system's now stayed since I left. So I suppose that's my legacy at
That's your
Keys.
legacy. I mean, so we've talked a lot about pros. Do we have cons?
I mean that seems clear. Is this no?
I guess, I mean, I guess there could be a scenario where you get there and you don't like your college culture, but actually, I think we've both said that really wherever you go, usually you find that you enjoy it and
So there are some examples. I know of only one example where the college was a huge misfit. So it was actually one of my college uncles. So he started at King's College, Cambridge. I don't know how much you know about King's, but it has a lot of tourists and traffic, essentially, a lot of people. It's essentially the central attraction of Cambridge from a
Yeah.
tourist perspective. It's the thing that looks best in the photos. And he suffered from a mental disorder, which kind of meant that he was very uncomfortable around groups of people and a little bit of
Okay.
agoraphobia. And I think, he did his best, but at the end of the first term in his fresh year, he had to move colleges. So he actually ended up moving to my college, which is just next door.
Okay.
So I suppose that environment, if he was at a university level or another campus university, it probably would have been much easier for him to move. And I suppose it was probably very disruptive for him to lose a circle of friends.
Yeah. Although, would it have been as easy to move out?
I guess.
I guess so. I've heard of people like moving halls because they didn't like their flatmates, that kind of thing. Yeah, it's difficult to think of like a, but you know.
I think the other thing is that you can become a bubble quite quickly and
Yeah.
only speak to people, and then essentially there's a risk of it becoming an echo chamber. So if you're not, if your college is extremely traditional, or extremely secular, or extremely right wing or left, whatever it is, if you only hang out with those kind of people on a consistent basis, aren't exposed to the others.
I suppose, but I do think actually, you know, an individual college is a more diverse community than a lot of people think. And you're more likely to become echo chambery if there's a cross college society that you only spend your time
Right,
with.
yeah, that's true.
So if you only spend your time with, I don't
Animal
know,
research, priority
yeah,
society.
then, you
Yeah.
know, you're getting the same kind of people from different places
Yeah.
sort of all joining up.
Sure. So
Whereas,
there's a selection filter effectively.
yeah, and I do think, you know, you certainly do want to have friends outside of your college and you know, meet as many people as you can and get along well with your, you know, your degree course people. One thing to remember is, you know, the people on your course have the same schedule as you. The people not on your course don't. So if you want to know, you know, I'm bored, who can I hang out with? Or you know, I'm not very busy these days with, you know, the number of essays I've had have dropped. You're more likely to be able to go to your, you know, other psychologists and say, well, what are we doing then, guys? Whereas, you know, if you go to your English friends, they might say, actually, I've got a dissertation, I've got no time. So
Yeah, sure.
it's certainly helpful to branch out from the college.
I suppose the other con would be you are more easily known.
Yeah.
So whilst it's easy to be recognised for your good effort, it's also
That's a good
if
point.
you are on the naughty spectrum, then you become infamous very quickly for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, if you have a friendship group that you fall out with, it because there's less like anonymity, you can't just sort of not slink away, but slink away and sort of move to a different group of people because they sort of, you know,
There'll be
you.
interaction between the two groups.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I certainly for big city unis like the London ones, when I was applying, I was pretty apprehensive of just being like a tiny dot in a huge wave of people. But actually, sometimes there are scenarios where that's beneficial, that is helpful.
Yeah, I guess the final thing is if you pick the, again, air quotes, but the wrong college, that could end up being a difficult thing. So, for what I'm thinking of is from across the population, I'm sure certain college satisfaction, certain colleges are much higher. For example,
Yeah.
John's College at Cambridge, whilst everyone loves hating on them, they provided, I think, 50% off the ski trip for one of their cohorts.
Nice.
Most people would very much appreciate that certain
Yeah,
colleges provide
absolutely.
free books, for example.
Yeah.
So if you ended up at a relatively poorer college, that is, and you just didn't have the foresight or the knowledge to be able to make that decision, then that's potentially a, it could create some friction between you and people at the colleges.
Yeah, and also, you know, you are going to have, there will be a bit of a reputation that you carry with yourself.
Yeah, I mean, when I first went in my first summer, I went on a travel trip to China for 3 months. I got paid thousands, I think, 1,000+ pounds for it. There were other people who did that exact same trip as me who got zero, and one person who got £4,000.
Okay.
So it's just, I suppose there's no standardization of policies because of these kind of cells that emerge.
Yeah. And also, you know, different colleges have different amounts of money to spend on their students.
Sure.
You know, lots of people think that Oxford and Cambridge University are enormously wealthy. They're not really, it's the colleges that are enormously wealthy. Yes, you know, Oxford University isn't going bankrupt anytime soon, and I'm sure they make plenty of money. I don't know your accounts, Oxford University, but it's the colleges themselves.
Get them through our colleges.
It's the colleges themselves which have the wealth, and also it's not necessarily having the wealth, but also having policies that can then get spent on the students. That's not something you're ever going to know just by researching the colleges. No. It's not something that people know, you know, even a year in, you find out, oh, I could have been getting grants for this or something like that.
Yeah, so I suppose the lack of consistency is what makes the collegiate system both good and bad in many ways.
Yeah.
Well, we should probably start wrapping up.
Yeah. Have you got a fact?
I'll let you go first.
Let me go first. Okay. So I was going to do a fact about vision, but I'll say that for another time, because I saw this quite recently.
Okay.
And so what it was is the chap who invented the Pringle, when he died, he was cremated, and his ashes are buried in a Pringles tube.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is very interesting.
That's all there is to it. I just found that really bizarre.
So I don't actually have a fact for this week, but building on what you said, you may have heard of people who do audio testing, but what you may not know, and this kind of ties into my earlier points about this cross-pollination of disciplines, is that there are people whose job it is to literally snap crisps all day and to hear the crunch that appears from it.
Okay.
So it's called a gastronomic audiology. There's all sorts of words for
it's a fancy name.
It is a fancy, but essentially it's people who look and assess the sound food makes when you break it, or the crunch of the crisp, or when you bite into an eclair, for example. What sound do you want to come from it, if any? And how does that change with time in terms of the age of the product? So often you'll see on the label of Pringles, for example, best before.
Okay.
That actually tends to refer more to the sound than the actual taste.
I guess the flavour would stay consistent for
the
longer.
The flavour stays consistent, but the texture changes. And obviously, if the texture changes, the sound dynamics change. So
I can think of worse jobs.
I mean, I think it'd be fascinating just trying to break things to see. Then you try and figure out, oh, no, we need a bit more corn in here. Sorry if I'm if any gastronomic audiologists are listening, I'm sorry if I'm simplifying your work. I'm sure there's a lot more science to be in it. They use all sorts of mathematical modelling. A talk I went to, they were using sine waves. So the perfect sound is apparently a sine wave.
Okay.
So what they do is they break crisps and then see if it resembles. But very interesting.
Yeah, cool.
All right. Well, good seeing you as always.
Yeah, likewise.